Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos, but that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk.
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Ollie Davis. You've heard my voice a lot, but in the YouTube version of this show that was put out in audio format, and I'm joined by the returning, move aside Shawn Michaels, move aside The Undertaker, it's even a better return than Kevin Owens after 1 week of quitting from Raw, it's Luke Owen.
Hello Swaff Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. How the devil are you?
I am actually very well. I am happy you're back.
Thanks, man. I'm very happy to be back. I really am.
Once upon a time, several months ago, this would have been a huge, dramatic, overblown story. But this time round,
I just went away, mate.
We didn't even really say that you were going away.
My wife even said, oh, have you done a storyline with you going away this time? I was like, nope. I just said on one of the news episodes, get away for 2 weeks. I'll be back soon.
After the WrestleTalk Cultaholic climax, especially the way it ended with us losing at SummerSlam.
Yeah, good work on that.
I'm just... you were part of that!
Yeah, but I have the high ground in that I said that Charlotte was going to win, which would have tied us at the very least. So I'm blaming you guys for the loss.
So that this recalls in my head The Last King of Scotland, the movie about Idi Amin. Mm-hmm. And who's the guy in that? Not Forrest Whitaker.
I was about to say Forrest Whitaker, but you were talking about the other guy.
Well, anyway, the other guy's like, you know, but I told you all these terrible things would happen, and you're on that guy's side. But Idi Amin, the evil dictator genocidal maniac, says, but you did not convince me.
Oh.
And that's what I feel towards you.
So you're an evil dictator?
No. No, that analogy starts to fall down.
Oh, when you get to that point, yeah.
We didn't even really talk about it. A lot of people were confused why you weren't on the channel.
Because I have been out of internet. I talk about this a little bit in the show, but I haven't had access to the internet or any 4G or anything like that because I've been out in the Canada wilds.
Where it's called 4J?
And it's called Rogers, I think.
What?
Yeah, I believe that's what it might be, like their service provider or something like that.
That's such a Canadian thing.
Yeah.
Just, Rogers.
Well, it's,
what a nice guy.
I arrived and Vodafone, who supply my cell service, texted me and said, like, hey, you're in one of our worldwide countries. You can roam where you like. It'll just cost you X amount per day. Could eyeballs, mate. Every time I tried, it just would not work. Couldn't make calls, couldn't make text messages. But it was actually quite nice to shut myself off completely. Only every now and again would I get access to Wi-Fi, and I would try and download some podcasts in case I needed them. And so the only bit of wrestling I've really caught up with is yours and Laurie's reviews of Raw and SmackDown for the last couple of weeks. And even then, I was listening to them while walking up a mountain. So I was, my concentration wasn't always completely focused on the show.
Well, that's all you need.
Yeah.
That's all you need is just in the background Wrestle Ramble. And you can stay up to date with nitpicking.
Oh, yeah.
And, character inconsistencies in WWE.
I found myself, though, being a member of the SWAF Nation at one point, though. Because there was because there was a point when you and Laurie were talking about Baron Corbin. And you were like, oh, and they were really putting over on commentary that he's like this Golden Gloves background and he's got things like that. And I was going like, they say that in every match. Mm. And you guys were saying like, it's the first time you'd ever heard it.
Okay.
If I was on YouTube, I would have then left a comment like, do you guys not actually listen to the commentary? Because they say that in almost every match.
And you would be well within your rights to do so. I don't wanna throw Fagador under the bus, but I did go, huh, really? Is that the first time? Because I famously do not listen to WWE commentary.
You do not.
It washes over me. I like it a lot more that way.
We talk about it on this show. I actually even saw it in your notes that it was about the second or third match that you were like, oh, Renee Young's on commentary.
It was, to be fair, it was the first match of the show. It just happened to be the second or third
segment
where she was already shown on camera.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Canada.
Yes, Canada.
Did you see Bret Hart?
I did not.
Did Natalya run down and make you her best friend?
No, neither did Trish Stratus or anything like that. I did not see any Canadians of the wrestling variety anyway. I saw obviously a lot of actual Canadians.
I actually spoke to Don Callis while you were away.
I know, you, yeah.
So I spoke to a Canadian.
Canadian within the wrestling world.
Yeah.
I did not. But it was, it was great. So we started in Vancouver. That's where we landed. Mm. We landed there on Sunday afternoon.
I love this play-by-play.
Yeah.
It's a level of detail you don't have to go into.
No.
But you're providing it for the SWAF Nation.
Well, that's what I like to do. And then I'll give you a brief rundown. We then drove to Whistler, which was an Olympic town.
This is how my dad describes holidays.
Yep.
Traveling. Just like, and times, how long each journey took.
It took quite a few hours. Some of them were like 8-hour drives. And then we were there from Whistler for a couple of days. Then we drove up to Wells Gray, where we stayed in these sort of lodges, things. We were camping pretty much the whole time we were there, cooking on stoves and stuff. I ended up becoming the dad of the group because I was always up first thing in the morning setting up the stove.
Big daddy? Cool?
Yeah, well, cool would not be the word I would use because...
Just big daddy.
Yeah.
Easy.
Because I was, at the most... I mean, I was a decade older than most people there. In one case, one of the girls was 19, so I was a decade plus.
Don't high five me. Honestly, Luke.
So I was a decade plus older than she was. I found out as well while talking to my guide that Trek America, who I did this with, have an age cutoff point where they essentially decide you're too old to do these tours now.
What age is that?
38. So
okay.
I was 6 years under it. But even so, I was like, she was talking about one of the tours she had that had a cutoff age at 30. Mm. I was like, I just would not be able to do that tour.
Famously, 18 to 30 club holidays, that has a cutoff point. Although, I went as a 16-year-old, and definitely there were people over 30 there. So I don't know how rigidly those kinds of laws are enforced.
Absolutely, yeah. But so from Wells Gray, we then went to Jasper, spent a couple of days in both of those, went canoeing in Wells Gray, which I did not enjoy. I did not care for canoeing. I much prefer kayaking.
Luke shoots on canoeing.
It's boring. I'll tell you that much. I'm going to shoot hard on it. It's a 4 out of 10. Is what it
four
is.
4 out of 10 for canoeing.
It's the Triple H of water sports. It is... I apologize if anyone is a canoeing fanatic on this show, but I think it is utterly boring. It is the most frustrating, boring thing you could possibly do on water.
Oh my God, someone's going to upload this as an isolated clip from YouTube and loads of new flip-de-dip-de spot monkey canoe enthusiasts are going to go crazy at you.
Yeah, .. canoe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, didn't enjoy canoeing. Then we went up to Jasper. Spent a couple of days there, went on some lovely hikes, then went across to Golden, where we went whitewater rafting. Now that is awesome. Whitewater rafting is really good.
This is a really busy Sunday.
I said I spent a couple of days.
Oh, okay. I thought it was still on Sunday.
No.
You hadn't updated the time.
I have said I spent a couple of days in each of them. Then Golden, a couple of days there, and then we went off to Banff, a couple of days there.
Banff?
Banff, yes. B-A-N-F-F. which I said to Kate, my wife, accidentally said her name there, sounds like a comic book popper, like when someone does a big punch on someone. It's an onomatopoeic word, which I very much enjoyed. I liked Banff, actually. Banff was really pretty.
So my knowledge of Canadian settlers is predominantly English and Canadian. Mm-hmm. Sorry, obviously. English and French.
Yeah.
So, but that sounds kind of like a Dutchy German word.
Mm. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know where it came from, to be honest with you. They did give us a lot of Canada history, but I'm pretty rubbish with like paying attention to things like that.
Okay.
And I will listen, but as soon as that's done, I will then have forgotten.
It's an audio bath.
Yeah.
That doesn't really go in you.
Yeah, pretty much. And then from Banff, we finished up our trip in Calgary. And then my wife and I then flew back from Calgary to Vancouver and spent a few days there. And I really like Vancouver. It's like a chilled out New York, is how I would describe it. And it's pretty wicked.
Because I'm Luke Owen and I can compare things to New York.
Because I have been to both.
Ooh, cosmopolitan Luke.
I have spent 6 days total in both places.
You know what? You've come back as a real dick, Luke Owen.
But can I tell you a really funny story about the group that I was in?
Please do. Bearing in mind, we've got another podcast to record.
Yes.
And we've got 40 seconds left of this intro.
Okay, well, maybe
we'll save it to the end.
Okay, maybe we'll save it to the end then. Yeah, I think it's worth saving until the end.
Cool, but we can really delve into it.
Yeah, but I would very much recommend Canada. I think Canada is an amazing country. I sadly didn't meet any members of the SWAF Nation while I was out there.
Yeah, cheap pops.
Someone did offer me tickets for a thing, like a sightseeing tower, which I thought was in Vancouver. It wasn't. It was in Toronto, so that was no use to me, unfortunately. And someone even offered us to go round to their house, and they were going to cook us a meal, which I thought was such a nice offer. So, one of our pledge hammers, James, which I thought was such a lovely offer, but I didn't
potentially also a serial killer.
Well, you know a bit from Alan Partridge. I just didn't want to impose on anyone. I'd much rather spend money out. But I would say this about Canada, and this very much is a North American thing, just pay your staff better so I don't have to constantly tip people or worry that I'm not tipping them enough and therefore they can't afford to buy their groceries. I'm not going on holiday to fill holes in your economy.
Yes.
And it's a messed up system. It's like Steve Buscemi says in Reservoir Dogs. I have to tip these people over here, but if you go into McDonald's or Tim Hortons, you don't tip them. Why not? They get paid the same crappy wage as the other people.
It's a weird social thing that is so embedded, it's considered the norm.
Yeah, it's so weird.
But that's a whole other conversation.
I love it whenever your conversations start with my dad.
You don't even want to. I'm of your mindset, but somehow my dad, who is also of our mindset, manages to make it an obnoxious thing where he makes a big point of only tipping people a minuscule amount if the service has been exemplary. Oh, it's ridiculous. Anyway, before we get into the main show, we have a bonus episode going up in the next 24-hour period.
It'll go up at some point, yeah.
Just to pre-warn you, it's not with us. Mm. It's of the sort of the writing staff behind the magazine, of which we are, you know, of course, also a part, but it was very busy last week. I couldn't make the tapings. Luke was in Canada. But it's James Dixon, who's the WrestleTalk magazine editor. You've got Andy Datson, one of the lead writers on the website. Greg Lambert, again, another website guy, who's written wrestling books. Finley Martin from Power Slam magazine, the former editor of that. And, you know, inside the ropes is Kenny McIntosh. So it's a 4 out of 5 show.
Yeah, exactly.
With that guy. But yes, let's get on with the podcast. Well, the actual show, because this was the podcast. You usually do these links. Well, last night, one of the most talked about. Well, I thought this was quite an eventful show overall. But the Wrestling Observer just wanted to talk about Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. Dave Meltzer had the line, well, not much else happened on this show otherwise. We got a tag title change. We got Seth Rollins potentially being injured. We got huge pull-apart brawls.
Kevin Owens returned,
albeit after a week. Drake Maverick is now an author of pain. Chad Gable and Bobby Roode are a team.
Well, that's it. Like, so I got, my mentions were kind of split this morning, which I was really surprised by because I finished watching the show and I checked Twitter and the people in my mentions were either saying this was a great show or it was the worst show of the year. In fact, one person went as far as to say you were going to need to create a new lower rating because it was below bore.
Bore would be the worst.
Yeah, they suggested a big pile of shanty.
Nice. That works. Doesn't rhyme with the word raw, though, which is the main caveat.
But I thought, you know, I didn't think the show was particularly sort of bad, but I mean, my main takeaway from it is certainly newsworthy.
Yeah, newsworthy. No, Luke, this is the internet. It's either the best thing or the worst thing.
You're absolutely right.
It can't be in the middle and quite... I mean, it's a three-hour show. There's enough on there, but, like, there are bad roars, and they are a struggle to sit through. I didn't think this was a bad raw at all, but the Kevin Owens stuff really got to me. It kind of balanced out in the middle for me.
I do wonder whether it's because I haven't watched it for 2 weeks, and it's amazing, really. So, like, I was on this, I was on my honeymoon, and I was going, I was doing a sort of trek around Canada with like a group of other people, and we had to have the conversation of like, what do you do for a living? And that was where I said, you know, I write and present videos for a YouTube channel. Oh, really? What's that about? And then, as a 32-year-old man, I have to go, that's pro wrestling. And then you have to have that conversation.
Soon that won't be. When All In is on national TV, it's going to be the cool thing to like.
But one of the interesting things that sort of came up was people like, oh, do you have to watch a lot of wrestling then? And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, WWE do a show every week. I was like, they do two shows every week, in fact, and then pay-per-views once a month. They were like, really? I was like, yeah, and the show they do on a Monday is 3 hours long. And the reaction when people hear, it's 3 hours long, they're like... You don't really register it. When you watch it on a week-to-week basis, you don't really register that 3 hours is a really long time.
It's like two short movies.
It's an episode of... Well, an episode. It's an edition of Lord of the Rings.
Mm. I always... Not the extended editions,
well,
though.
Obviously not, no. Unless there's an overrun.
Well, so far, you know, they could come 2019, 2020.
Yeah, when that Fox deal comes in.
Yeah, just 5 hour Smackdowns. Take that, Peter Jackson. Yeah, it is. It is quite something. But yes, back to the topic of this.
Yes.
The opening. Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels was teased last week. We all knew he was going to be here. Undertaker was reported to be in attendance backstage. So we, you know, kind of got the. You can work it out. He's going to have a match with Triple H. Shawn Michaels is going to be talking about that match. They've got history. So we kind of all knew already that Taker was coming out.
But I didn't see the reports that Undertaker was in the building. Mm. Like, obviously, when I woke up this morning, after I finished watching the show, you kind of look at the news sites and like, oh, yeah, Undertaker was reported to be there. But I had no idea. So when the gong went off and his music hit, my first thought was like, it's Triple H.
Yes.
It's Triple H coming out dressed like The Undertaker.
Or a little person dressed like The Undertaker.
Yeah, well, I mean, I assumed it would be Triple H, and then everyone would be like, oh, well, it's Triple H. But then when the crowd reacted when Undertaker first came out on stage and you had Michael Cohen going, oh, my! And I was like, oh, it's actually The Undertaker.
My man! It's my man, The Undertaker!
My first note was like, wow, The Undertaker's actually here. This is getting more promotion than WrestleMania.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, those are paid-for shows in other countries.
I mean, John Cena was
lucrative.
There. John Cena was there week after week calling out The Undertaker for him to come. Shawn Michaels didn't even call him out. He just mentioned his name and he appears.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about respect.
So, I mean, that must be quite nice in a way that you could, you know, we're all quite jaded, cynical wrestling fans. We like to know what's going to happen before it happens. You didn't know The Undertaker. So that was a nice surprise for you.
It was a genuinely really nice surprise.
Yeah, I mean, it got a huge pop. And I always love seeing The Undertaker.
The loudest reactions to this show were Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, and Ronda Rousey.
Mm.
I thought they were the ones who were getting the best reactions all night, because the crowd for a lot of this show were dead.
Oh, do you think? I thought Ohio were quite good.
Oh, no.
You know what Ohio like? Ohio chants. They really got into that part with Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, they were themselves were also over. But like, I thought during the main event they were really dead. I thought during the women's tag match with the Hug and Boss Connection against Moon and Brooke, where they were completely dead. The Bobby Lashley,
how dare they?
The Bobby Lashley shanty thing, all the stuff in the third hour, basically, they were completely dead
for.
Yeah,
I don't think that's their fault.
Oh no, I'm not saying it was their fault. I'm just saying I thought the crowd were very much dead for a lot of this show. But they came alive when The Undertaker appeared. And it was like, this felt like a genuine reaction. And I thought this segment overall was awesome.
Well, okay. HBK comes out. That was great. Huge pop. As soon as Shawn Michaels starts talking, like, I kind of was like, oh, it's going to be one of those promos. And it was really buzzword heavy. It didn't sound naturalistic. And Michaels is tends to be pretty good at making even bad WWE scripts work. And the crowd seemed to like get sapped of energy. I thought that part went on too long, and I was like, "Oh, geez, where is this going?"
Plugging his new T-shirts,
yeah,
saying you have to, you know, plug in the network, and then saying, "So subscribe to the network, and then buy the pay-per-view on the network," which suggests to me that Shawn Michaels has never watched the WWE network and doesn't know how it works.
Yeah, even though he works for NXT, right? So that's kind of a network thing.
Yeah,
but then the Undertaker's big dong hits, and this whole segment was transformed into something very good. Just seeing Undertaker and Michaels in the ring, just that visual alone was incredible. But then the actual content of the promo,
so good,
and how they worked around their history together, I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah,
and Shawn Michaels saying, "I stayed retired out of respect for the business, for the fans, and for you."
Yeah. And it was great. And he was about to walk away, and The Undertaker had that money line where it was like, was it respect or fear?
Yes.
Because, you know, if you came out of retirement, you would have to face me again. And I thought, that's a brilliant line. It was so, so good. But and that's the interesting thing here is that I didn't really, I kind of thought about it at the time, but certainly not to the degree that Meltzer and Alvarez certainly did on Wrestling Observer Radio, which was that they felt that they were teasing another match between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. I really more felt that this was teasing Michaels' involvement in the match itself rather than a sort of... Because they'll essentially do what they did at WrestleMania 28? Whichever one...
Special guest referee.
Whichever one the Hell in a Cell was, where it was the three of them there and they did the end of the era, you know, pose at the end. I figured they would essentially just redo that again so they can do the end of era pose on the ramp.
Because WWE don't like doing finality one time.
No.
They do like to do a sequel to the finality.
But this one's in a different country, so it doesn't count.
And 10 years, what? Like, almost 10 years after Michaels and Taker had that match. But I, like, when Michaels was saying, I wish he'd developed it more. I know it was subtle, but I thought he could have... I don't think WWE wanted to really address this part, the subtext of the promo, which is essentially, I stayed retired out of respect for you. And didn't you leave your gloves and coat and hat in the ring?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now you're back.
Yeah, and it was weird as well because he was making, kind of pointing out to all the other people that have quote-unquote retired but then come out, you know, Ric Flair, Mick Foley, Terry Funk, you know, all these sorts of people who are like, no, I'm done.
Enzo Amore.
Yeah, I'm done, I'm retired. And he's kind of like, sort of, I stayed retired. But yeah, he never really mentioned that The Undertaker retired, so to speak, but then... You know, and he broke his character then as well because he went out of the ring to kiss Michelle McCool and be like, that was it. That's the Undertaker character done and dusted, only to return at WrestleMania again this year and at the Greatest Royal Rumble. But I really, there was another line in this I really liked that I just wanted to talk about, which is when Undertaker was talking about how, yeah, you and Triple H have been friends for over 20 years. And in those 20 years, I have beaten you both and I have buried you both. And at Melbourne, Australia, I'm just going to do it again.
Yeah.
It was great.
Taker's delivery and just his presence was so badass.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, felt like this was a Taker of, you know, a many a year ago.
Yeah, this was not the Undertaker that was at Raw 25. Remember that rambly, weird promo that he cut at Raw 25 that no one knew? And to this day, I don't know what was about. This was the total opposite of that. This really did feel like that Undertaker that was, you know, he was there to promote a WrestleMania caliber match. But it's, you know, for a network special, for a glorified house show.
So there was a report while you were away. It's from Ticket Drew, who has become a bit hit and miss, but he said there is something huge planned for Royal Rumble. And if you are a long-time WWE
fan... He also said that for SummerSlam, though. And he was saying that it was going to be Undertaker,
John Cena, yeah. Well, you know, plans change. I'm just saying what's been reported out there. And he has broken some stuff.
He
has been very wrong on certain other things. But, like, him saying that there's a big thing for Royal Rumble. And if you the wording of it, if you're a long-time fan of WWE, you wouldn't want to miss this because it will never happen again. And I like when he said that, I thought, well, that to me sounds like a Shawn Michaels or a Taker thing, because Michaels was teased to make a return a few years ago at the Royal Rumble against AJ when AJ had the match against Cena. Although that was just fantasy booking and it sort of ran away with itself. So yeah, I just that's That's what I've got in my head now.
So when I saw Ticketroo had reported that, my mind went to The Rock. Mm-hmm. The Rock being a
Yes, that was the other side of things. Or Batista.
Yeah, The Rock being a surprise entrant in the Rumble and winning the Rumble and then facing Reigns at WrestleMania. Mm. That was my line of thinking. I didn't think it was but then again, I didn't think that it would get a tease of a Shawn Michaels Undertaker match on Raw this week.
Yeah.
It was really cool. I actually thought some Triple H, Shawn Michaels had some good lines in there as well. He was like, do you realize that I've been offered multi-million dollar contracts year after year? They asked me to come back into the ring and I never do it. And I like that sort of element of realism to it, of this guy who was retired by The Undertaker and he has been offered these contracts. And, you know, reportedly every year the company do say one more match. You know, there was that rumor last year, wasn't it? Shawn Michaels, AJ Styles.
Yeah.
At the Rumble. But he always turns it down.
And not just the money, but loads of wrestlers that he is now mentoring in NXT saying, please let me have that match with you.
Yeah,
I'd love to have the match.
Dream matches. That Shawn Michaels-Adam Cole match we all want to see.
Oh, that would be amazing. So be Michaels said in the past that he wouldn't want to work with someone like that who's similar to him. But his exact quote, I remember it, because it came off a bit creepy. Was, oh, the things I could do with Samoa Joe. Oh, because we're different styles.
Ooh, oh. Sean.
Oh.
Ooh, Michaels. Sexy boy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So let's picture this. Luke leaves the country 2 days before SummerSlam.
Did indeed.
And, you know, you largely stay away from wrestling.
The day off SummerSlam.
And you come back, you watch this episode of Raw, and it opens. Braun Strowman's a heel now, and he's with Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre.
Right, so I actually have been completely out of the wrestling picture. Like, I've not been attached to the internet. There's only been various times where I've managed to get Wi-Fi. And when I have, I haven't been checking news sites. I haven't been checking anything. I didn't check up
You're
on
Raw. Straight on Pornhub.
Well, absolutely. If you get that little modicum of internet, where else are you going to go?
Yeah, they're just images. Maybe it won't support a whole video.
Oh, no, but you look at the thumbnails.
Yeah,
that's
you can have
you
the
need.
Thumbnails scroll through.
Exactly. But I've not gone onto any wrestling news sites or anything like that. The only period of time where I actually had some wrestling sort of like recaps or anything like that was because I was going to be hiking up a hill and hiking back down a hill. It was a mountain.
And it seems like a metaphor for watching Raw most weeks.
It was, because it was all uphill as well. It was all incline. and it was an 11.5 kilometer hike. So I thought to myself, I'm going to use this little modicum of income of internet I have to download some Wrestle Ramble podcasts, and I'll catch up on Raw and SmackDown before I come back, because it was like on my last day, my wife wasn't doing the hike with me, so I had some podcasts. I had some podcast time to myself. So that was when I listened to, and that was, I had this whole conversation about, like, is Becky a heel? Is she a babyface? What was this all about? But the most confusing one, I was like, yeah, Braun's a heel now. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm sure it's just one of those things that WWE just always, you know, he's a tweener now, isn't he? He's sort of a heel, but not really. But it was the bizarrest thing in the world that 2 weeks later I've come back and Braun and McIndolph are like this faction now. And I'm like, what? And then Braun cuts this promo where he essentially says, you people. And he did the, and he turned on the fans. And I'm like, oh, cool. So he is definitely a heel then.
Yeah, so last week it was that there was an argument, there was a justification for him turning on Reigns, because Reigns, even though Strowman rather fairly said, look, I'm going to cash in my Money in the Bank contract on you. And Roman was like, nah, you can't do that because I've got my Shield buddies and we're going to beat the crap out of you. So Braun, the next week, when he has to tag with him, decides to just leave Roman high and dry and then get his revenge on Roman. You know, that's... And you're like, okay, you're not going to have a heel-face dynamic. You can make it quite interesting and complex. Nope, all of that was scrapped. Braun Strowman is an out-and-out heel. It's again, you are sacrificing someone who was organically over as a babyface that the crowd wanted to cheer, that you'd done such a good job making that role perfect for, but you just feed into someone that you want this other person to get that reaction. It's just like, yeah. Charlotte and Becky. Like, Charlotte is the Roman Reigns in that situation.
Yeah, and I would say that I don't think they've done a perfect job with him, because I thought it would be... The heel face dynamic between him and Kevin Owens was really skewed, because it was just Braun bullying a person week after week, and then, by all accounts, squashing him at SummerSlam, choke slamming him onto the ring or onto the walkway.
Yeah, in a couple of minutes. And if you're gonna do that, if you know where you're going, make that a double turn. Like, maybe make Owens by the end of it, because I'm quite keen to have him as a face now. I think it's just got to that point, and Braun Strowman could have turned slowly through that feud. But no, you just... It was really ill thought out, this whole thing.
It's so bizarre. And yeah, and then he's like, oh, and I don't give a damn what you fans think. And it's the from what I can gather, based on your and El Fakador's review, is that that's what Becky Lynch did in her first promo, where she was like, you fans let me down and you turned on me, which wasn't the case at all. And then the second week, they kind of dropped that aspect of it.
Yes.
And they say that she is now sort of this... She is now in this tweener role, which is, I think, is well, according to Road Dogg, but that was what we were doing all along.
No, yeah. So Braun is now, he's like even smirking like a heel.
Oh, yeah. This is 100% an out-and-out heel performance. And then at the end of this show, where all the heels were beating down the Shield, you're like, with Kevin Owens, no less, you're like, there is no doubt in anyone's mind that Braun is anything other than a heel. And it's funny as well, because I was thinking about this on the way here. I'm almost certain in lead-ups to SummerSlam, we were talking about, oh, what if Braun cashes in on Roman at SummerSlam and he wins the belt, and then you do Roman going after Braun and you did the big match at WrestleMania. That's your new Roman Reigns coronation moment, and it's Braun conquering the monster. But we said, yeah, but it doesn't really work, because that way you'd have to turn Braun heel, and if there's one person you don't want to turn heel right now, it's probably Braun Strowman.
Yes.
And so, yet here we are.
And you package him with Drew and Dolph, who, as much as I love, I don't really feel like this is it's quite a contrived pairing.
Well, it was like when the Shield returned last year.
And
suddenly you're just like,
Kane as well, Braun Strowman.
The Miztourage.
The Bar as well.
we'll just throw people
no
in there.
Way you can have three men taking on the Shield. That's unfair for the three men. But speaking of the Shield then come down through the crowd. I've got to admit, I'm marked out here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I got Poppy. Poppy in my seat.
This is what they do, it, man. They're trying to get you to like Roman Reigns.
It's Dean Ambrose's face.
Yeah.
He looks vacantly demented.
I love it. So cool.
Mouth open, vacant eyes. He looks violent.
Well, this is the first time I've seen Dean
Lunatic Without a Fringe.
Lunatic Without a Fringe, because obviously I saw him return, but then I haven't seen anything since then. And I was like, man, he does look really cool, particularly in the riot gear and everything like that. And the way he walks the ring, sort of like cocking his fist and everything. It's like Henry Cavill in Mission Impossible Fallout.
You seen that now?
No, I haven't, but I've seen that gif where he grows a beard.
He's good. He grows a stash.
Well, no, because he's already got the stash, but like when he does the thing, the arm sort of like pump thing, his beard grows as well.
Nice.
It's amazing.
So the Shield start to go for the heels in the ring, but Baron Corbin comes out. He's like, no, go out there, jobbers. And all the mid-card and undercard come down and try and separate Shield from the Mackendolfman.
Yeah, Mackendolfman.
Mackendolfman.
Like, yeah.
And I like this. I thought it was a good pull-apart brawl.
Yeah,
it was chaotic.
I thought the pull-apart brawl was really, really cool. Like, and it was one of the few rare occasions that they do a pull-apart brawl where they even put stars out there to break it up, because Lashley was out there breaking things up. Usually they put the lower mid-card guys out there so you know your place on the roster, but it really did feel very chaotic, and I liked that. Dolph had a really weird line, though, when he was talking about the teams that they're more dominant than. Bear in mind, this is meant to be like quite a serious team that we're taking seriously. And he's like, we're more dominant than DX. We're more dominant than the Shield. We're more dominant than the Nation of Domination. And I'm like, of all the teams you could have picked, that to me seemed like it was a really like wacky line.
He's a wacky guy.
He's
Ziggler.
A wacky guy.
It's a classic stand-up joke, isn't
say,
it?
He's a stand-up. He's a stand-up comedian.
He's just trying material.
But he opened with the punchline because he said that one first.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to try material. Try play with the conventions of structure.
Yeah.
So backstage after the break, this whole brawl is still going on, but now it's with the Shield and. I didn't quite understand what was happening because it was just white-shirted police officers.
Yeah.
Not like what I would... Not bobbies with the little British top hats on.
No, I mean, I don't know what Ohio police look like. I'm assuming they look like this. But police were putting them into the back of a van and they were arresting them.
It looked like accountants. It looked like the accounting department was tasked with doing something that the wrestlers couldn't do. Control the Shield, and yeah, they handcuffed them, put them in the back of a police van, drive them off. And I, as soon as they drove off in that van, I was like, they're coming back in the back. When that happened later on, I was not like, this is ridiculous.
No.
I'm like, this is fun.
Exactly, this is what we were all expecting. Also, Renee was on commentary again.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I only noticed that 2 segments in.
They literally had a shot of her being introduced.
I glaze over when I see the commentary
there. It's so funny.
Like, I can understand not realising that it was Todd Phillips or Michael Cole, when Michael Cole filled him for... I didn't know that until after the review happened.
Until I told you.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, Michael Cole did the show.
But, you know, Renee Young is drastically different
Coachman.
From Coachman.
Yeah.
So Coachman was playing golf.
He's reporting on golf, yes. I believe, yeah.
Next up. Okay, so this is another thing that's happened since you've gone away.
Yeah, the Bellas are back.
The Bellas never left SummerSlam. So they turned up
at
SummerSlam.
Okay, okay. All right, okay.
And they kind of... They were just in a few segments. They were ringside for Ronda Rousey's match.
Why?
And awkward... they never explained it. And awkwardly got in the ring and celebrated with Ronda and Natalya. Because women are always, they're either friends or they're enemies.
Or training partners.
Or training partners. They just haven't left. And Brie Bella is currently the only inter-brand star. Because
Nikki,
she's also on SmackDown.
Yes, because she's got a match at Hell in a Cell.
Teaming with Daniel Bryan.
And based on this performance, I'm not looking forward to her in-ring work.
Look, I have been saying, I don't know when it became an unpopular opinion to not like the Bella twins.
Right. Is this like the Alicia Fox thing?
It's like, I feel like a lot of people have been brainwashed that Alicia Fox and the Bella Twins are acceptable wrestlers. You're like, no, were you not there? Were you not there from 2008 to like 2013? Well, they just ran under the ring and pretended, it was the worst 2-minute matches. And that's not like, you know, you could say that's WWE management's fault for not giving the women the time. It's also the Bella's fault for being awful.
Okay, so... I'm going to try and explain how I think this might have come about.
Okay.
Because it's very much a generational thing. This is like, there is a generation of Star Wars fans that just flat out believe the prequels are as good as the originals, because that's the one they were kids when, like, they were kids when those films came out. Like, I had someone defend to me to their dying breath They're still alive. But like they would like it was the hill they were going to die on. That Attack of the Clones is a great film, and I'm like, but it's categorically not. Like it is factually not a good film.
I know that another 10-year-old nephew debates are the worst, aren't they?
But it's fine. That was the film. There's films that I watched when I was a kid that I would be like, no, that's a great film, even though factually not a great film. So I wonder if it's just that they were kids when they saw Alicia Fox and the Bellas. So now that they're slightly older, they're like, oh no, they were good, weren't they?
No, I think it's because the Bellas have reached sort of a kind of legendary status.
Oh, well that's what WWE will have you believe. Like their ring introduction was like, the first time in 3 years they've wrestled as a team on Raw, it's the Bella Twins. And it was meant to be like this big, finally. Oh, it's like the Shield reuniting. It's the Bella Twins on. It's like Michael's Undertaker in the ring at the same time.
So I'm going to venture into sort of dodgy territory here.
Uh-oh.
And I just want to pose a question. Would the Bellas be so beloved by the fans? Well, not beloved, but, you know, like, get these kind of legendary reactions if one of them hadn't married very fan favorite Daniel Bryan, and the other one, you know, was in a long-term relationship with John Cena, and they got that WrestleMania moment. So you have that build where it's like, this is a legendary thing happening.
I would say yes, because even before that, the company were always really behind the Bella Twins and always sort of pushed them as this big thing. Like, when they first joined the company, I didn't get it. I really didn't get it because I just thought they were
twins, all... Twins, Basil!
Twins! Like... But that was all I could really see, was just Vince McMahon backstage go, twins, and being really excited by the whole thing. Because I thought, there's nothing special about these two. And they left and they came back. And my first thought was like, why'd you bring them back?
Yeah.
And then they just, I think that the company just loved them. And here is my reasoning why they love them, is because they appeal to the casual market. The casual market, because they've got their reality TV show, par exemple. I used to work for a company, and one of my managers there had no interest in wrestling. She just could not give one iota about wrestling, but she loved Total Divas. And in particular, she loved Brie Bella. She thought she was the best thing on the show. She loved Brie Mode as a phrase, so much so that when I went to a wrestling show, she asked me and my friend to buy her a Brie Mode t-shirt so that she could wear it. She has, and she's never watched wrestling in her life, but she loves Brie Bella. So okay. I think that the company kind of see these two as like they're stars outside of the company, and we can put them on here as reality TV show stars, and that's why we like them.
Okay, well, whatever happened, Brie Bella did botch two dives quite horribly.
It was so funny because when she, I mean, it's not funny, but when she botched the first one, I think Sarah Logan, she was a bit late on it as well.
Kind of meant to. Do a forearm into it, yeah.
It wasn't 100% Brie's fault, but Brie was never diving through those ropes. She was so unsure of her footing. And she botched, and I was like, oh, that's a bit of a shame, because it looked a bit silly, and it was a bit rubbish. But then when she set up to do the second dive, I was like, well, thankfully she can do the second dive, because the first one looked really rubbish. And then the second one was probably worse. And I was like, oh, poor Brie Bella. Because it was bad.
Yeah, so I
did. And I think Logan and Wright were possibly out of position on the second dive as well. But again, Brie was never going to make it because she was the way that Ember Moon does those dives, where she just throws herself out of the
committed.
Ring. She is committed. Brie Bella was not committed to these dives.
No, I didn't. I didn't like this match. Not just from the result of beating the Riot Squad, because, you know, it's the Bellas coming back, or because the Bellas were involved. I just thought it was a sloppy match. I did like the yes kicks though. I thought that was a nice spot.
Bit of commentary from Michael Cole, and granted I've been away for 2 weeks, so maybe things have changed, but he said the Riot Squad have been, quote, beating up people and winning.
No, that's a lie.
Okay, I'm just checking nothing's changed in the last 2 weeks.
Next up, we got Finn Balor asking for yet another match against Baron Corbin after Corbin, like, sort of pulled a no DQ trick last week and beat him up after that. And... Baron said, okay, I'll see what I can do. And Finn is just standing there like a goofball smiling. So he went serious for a bit, but he just looked so stupid smiling.
Where is Kurt?
Oh, so Kurt's been fired.
Yeah, I...
Well, on indefinite vacation, right. Courtesy of Stephanie McMahon.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he returning for Survivor Series, we think?
Well, yeah, like for some form of match is the rumour. But it struck me this week about how little he has missed. And you will find no bigger Kurt Angle fan than I.
Mm, absolutely. And I know that for a fact, because you know I've spoken about it. He's your favourite wrestler of all time. Mm. Also, the Bella Twins will be teaming with Ronda Rousey to take on Riot Squad at Super Showdown.
Really?
That was the match they announced after the Bella Twins, yeah.
Fantastic.
Cool.
But first positive of the show. Well, I like the opening segment. We fell down a bit of a Bella hole there. Maybe that's what Brie fell into when she jumped
Brie
through the ropes.
Brie hole!
And it was... Chad Gable is all of a sudden a tag team with Bobby Roode.
I know. This was such a weird backstage thing. They were like, oh, we're a new team now.
This is as new to me as it is to you. Okay. This just happened. And it was just so endearingly goofy with Bobby Roode doing his glorious entrance. Then Chad Gable seems to pop up from beneath him and do the pose as well.
Well, yeah, it almost felt like, and I think they were talking about some commentary, it almost feels like the story they're telling at the moment is that Gable can't get into the spotlight.
Mm.
So that Bobby Roode is a bigger star than he, and he's always trying, and that was told throughout the match as well, like he blind tagged himself in. Because I'll be honest with you, if the story you're telling is that Roode is the biggest star and Gable is trying to get the spotlight, I wouldn't have booked the match that Gable runs wild, Roode tags in, gets beaten up, Gable tags himself back in and wins the match for them. Because Roode did nout in this match.
But Chad did everything.
Chad was awesome in this match.
Do you remember there was a period, I think it was last year, where Cesaro was just on this tear of hot tags, mm-hmm. where the entire of Raw would just be building up to a Cesaro hot tag. And he'd take out like 7 people in one fluid run in and out of the ring. That's what Gable did here. Runs over to the corner, hops over onto the apron, rolling senton to take out one guy, back up to the turnbuckle, dropkick on the other. Chaos Theory for the win.
This was so, so good. And my notes are essentially like, why isn't Gable a bigger star? I was like, in any other promotion, he'd be pushed as a top guy.
Because he's a short man.
He's
a little short guy.
Yeah, and it was weird as well. I said, okay, can we quickly talk about Connor's promo beforehand, though?
Yeah, okay.
So Connor says that Bobby Roode couldn't make it in the singles division, so he's now had to move into the tag team division. And then he calls Gable a sawed-off duck butt.
Mm.
That screams to me that's a backstage joke.
Yeah.
That they thought that they would put, and like, but the audience just didn't react to it at all. And then the commentators went, no idea what that was about.
Duck butt.
A sawed off duck butt.
Yeah. Like a sawed off shotgun.
Is there a WWE.com series that we've missed?
Probably with Mike Rome doing something. Yeah. So this is, you know, this is promising. I like that they're focusing on the tag division. That was kind of one of the underlying stories of this show. And they're making this new act. And hopefully Chad and Bobby could become this pretty good team together. And it, you know, sort of builds it perfectly for an eventual Roode heel turn on Chad.
Or Chad heel turn on him, possibly. It could go either way. But what I really liked about this is that Roode had the biggest smile on his face after he won. But the way that he was smiling wasn't like, hey, we won. It smiling was like, I found my lottery ticket. Mm. I found a winning lottery ticket in Chad Gable. This could be my path to success.
Which would neatly fuel a heel character.
Yeah.
I'm just going to use you. You do all the work. And Chad's like the preppy guy. I just want to help out.
But it's my entrance. We come out to my music. You're not allowed in my spotlight.
Yeah. I really hope that's the direction they go in.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so this was very, very good. Elias next. This is something, again, that's been happening since you've been away. Elias will come out, do his song shtick, and then... women will come out and it will turn into a Natalya match.
Amazing.
It happened with Trish Stratus last week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I did believe...
And it turned into a Natalya match.
I'll be honest with you, when the Riot Squad were in the ring, I was like, it's going to be Bayley and Banks, isn't it? Mm. Nothing's changed.
No, that's changed.
That's changed.
Not that they're doing anything.
They've just moved on.
They're focusing on that next star of the women's division, Dana Brooke, instead.
We'll come on to that. But yeah, so... he was singing a song, but I did like it when he was like, you know, I don't advocate women hitting men. And then I was like, and Trish embarrassed herself last week, which I thought was a really funny line. And then cut a promo on Christopher Columbus and your local sports team.
Yes. Yeah, it was good. And hometown gal Alexa Bliss comes out. And she's sort of...
in an Ohio t-shirt. She's got a specific t-shirt for her hometown.
She was doing... I would say the shtick that Bliss does better than anyone else on the roster.
Yeah.
I don't like Carmella does it kind of annoyingly, but Bliss is very good at it.
So good at it.
Which is, I'm going to cut a babyface promo for once. Just this little moment. Not I'm still a heel. Columbus sucks. Yeah. Couldn't wait to get out of this place.
I wonder why that's why I could never get on with Carmella as champion, because Bliss was just doing it so much better.
Yeah.
Could be.
Possibly.
Yeah. And that character makes no sense.
So Bliss kind of starts to flirt with Elias, saying that she wants to walk with Elias. Mike Rome, poor guy. And,
Is that another WWE.com thing?
It's another WWE.com thing. And then Ronda comes out with Natalya. And yeah, then it turns into Bliss versus Natalya. They have an okay match, I thought.
I really like the finish with Bliss hitting her DDT, not going for the pinfall, and instead locking in an armbar.
Looking right at Ronda Rousey at ringside, of course, building up that rematch. And there was there was a spot where Bliss just did a punch, and it like floored Natalya.
Yeah.
I like that.
But Corey called Alexa, quote, a sports person.
Mm.
And then everyone sort of made fun of Corey for calling her a sports person. And I thought, even when Coachman's not there, his presence is felt.
Yeah. You can't say sportswoman. It's a sports person. It's a gender neutral.
But I don't think a sports person's not a thing. And that's why everyone was making fun of him.
Make it a thing.
Because he was like, she's a brilliant sports person.
but this turns into Ronda coming in to help Natalya. Stuff happens, and then Ronda destroys Alicia Fox.
Well, okay, so Bliss attacked Ronda. I mean, my notes read here. Bliss attacks Ronda, she fights back. Fox gets in, Ronda fights back. Alexa attacks again, Ronda fights back and stands tall. And I think you and Laurie might have, because bearing in mind when I was listening to the podcasts, obviously you were very entertaining on all the four of them that I listened to.
Mm.
But I was also walking up a hill and trying to focus on not dying.
Sure.
So a lot of my, not my attention was on everything. But you're talking about how like Ronda being built as the star of the division is kind of hurting the rest of the Raw women's landscape.
Yes.
And that kind of like really felt this here. And this is why I really didn't think that Ronda should have won the belt at SummerSlam, because I thought there's more money and more interest in her in the chase than there is as her as champion. Because at the moment, now it just appears to be, particularly on this final segment, she is champion and no one is as good as her.
Totally. That's totally what it is. Mm. And also it means that we have to do a dance routine, which is frustrating.
If only we'd said that Charlotte would win, which
It wouldn't have helped.
It would have tied us.
Would have tied, I guess. That Fox kind of sells the arm thing really quite stupidly.
Say negative things about Alicia Fox. She is a stalwart. She is a figure post of this division.
So she's kind of like backing up the ramp in tears, vibrating, it seems. But yeah, whatever. Then we get Baron Corbin backstage with McDolphman, and McDolph wants a tag title match, and Corbin says, well, the Revival are already going to take on the B team, so, I mean, unless they were unable to compete.
Yeah, it felt like this was out of order, because they were like, oh, we heard the Revival were injured. Corbin's like, well, I've heard that they're fine. I was like, well, if anything happened to them, what would happen then?
It was okay.
I really like this. I thought McDolph essentially going like, what if something was to happen to the Revival? And Corbin, being the heel authority figure, was like, well, I mean, if that were to happen, then things would probably change. But, I mean, I'm not saying they could happen. I'm just saying if it was to happen.
That, like, Corbin is actually quite a good heel authority figure.
Yeah.
He's really kind of making Raw quite corrupt in a logical way.
Yeah.
Like, I like the storytelling here.
I was a big fan of this.
Yeah, way prefer it to Kurt. Or Kurt and Baron. This is much better.
Or Stephanie.
So the Revival are having an interview next with Charlie Caruso backstage ahead of their title match. But Mac and Dolph come in from nowhere and start destroying them, throw them into production boxes. And for the B team are in the ring. So McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler come out.
Yeah, and it was a really good looking beatdown as well.
Mm.
It didn't get a lot of heat, but I thought it was a really awesome beatdown.
Yeah, the ensuing match was fine. I liked how they gave B-Team some plucky comeback stuff and they teased the roll-up wins. But in the end, McIndolph killed Curtis Axel.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. If that was the finish they were going to do, why didn't they just do it as like a... Because like they, at the start of the show, they said it was like, we're the most dominant team. You know, we're going to be the more dominant DX, more dominant than The Shield. And then they were really beaten up for a long time by the B-Team of all people. I just thought that if you're going to do this as like we're a really dominant force, particularly with what you had at the end, just have them win really quickly.
Yeah, like a squash thing.
They're comedy geeks. Just squash them.
Mm.
Like So that's my only criticism of this. Positive, though, they're not champions anymore. Now Mac and Dolph are the champions. And also, that it elevates the Revival off the back of that as well, because now the Revival would seemingly go into a program with Mac and Dolph, because they screwed them out of their tag team title shot, which, by all accounts, they should have won because they've been beating them week in, week out on Raw since SummerSlam, if I'm correct. So that now puts, like, and these guys have been positioned with The Shield and all these top guys, so now the Revival are in that position as well. So I think that's a good thing.
And you've got Gable and Rude and the Authors of Pain, who we'll come on to. I didn't mind the B team getting a fight back. I quite enjoyed it, even though I'm not keen on the B team. I hate their entrance music.
Rah, rah,
I hate that we've gone into this place with the tag division. But I did appreciate them trying to keep their belts and staving off these bullies. Mm-hmm. I always get into a sort of overcoming the bullies storyline. But yes, next up, sort of continuing with this revamp of the tag division, a soft reboot, the Authors of Pain come out with their new member, Drake Maverick.
Well, he's not a member, he's a manager. Because clearly the office have decided, it's not what these Authors of Pain lads are missing. They're missing a manager. If only they didn't come pre-packaged with one when they were called up. Like, that was my only thought I had of this. It's like, I mean, you had a manager already there, right?
Yeah.
Why didn't you just have Paul Ellering with them?
Yeah, but now it's completely ridiculous.
It's Drake Maverick, but it's not Drake. It's not babyface 205 Live general manager Drake Maverick. This is heel Drake Maverick dressed up like an Author of Pain. Why isn't he in his wacky suits?
I have no idea what they were going for here. And I am interested, and I hope this is, I think this has potential. So I'm not writing it off completely, but as a first outing, what were they thinking? If they're thinking, oh, Drake Maverick dresses a little bit wacky, we don't want to have that look with the Authors of Pain, who are serious and dominating monsters. This is worse! Having him dressed up like a mini-me version of Ackerman Razor makes him look stupid.
Yeah. Do you remember when Kurt Angle came out dressed like The Shield? And everyone was like, God, that's a bit goofy, isn't it?
Yes.
You look well,
that's
ridiculous.
That's exactly,
mate,
what it looked like. And you say that this wasn't 205 Live general manager Drake Maverick. Tell Drake Maverick that, because his whole promo was, I am 205 Live general manager Drake Maverick, and I am now also the manager of the Authors of Pain, who are like the opposite of 205 Live.
My favourite thing about this was that, like, so it cuts backstage and Authors of Pain are walking with Drake Maverick in between them. And the commentators are going, what's Drake Maverick doing with the Authors of Pain? And then Drake Maverick grabs the microphone when they're in the ring. And they're like, oh, great, we're going to get a reason for this. And Drake went, I'm now the manager of the Authors of Pain. And we're like, okay, I guess that's the reason then.
Yeah.
You're just, there was no reason. He's just the manager now.
That's the problem. It's, and like, Authors of Pain and Drake Maverick are so good, I reckon they can make this work.
100%.
But I just wish we wouldn't have been, we would have been given a little bit more.
A reason, for
example.
Yeah,
a reason. Like, just have something of, like, Drake approaches them backstage as they're beating up some 205 Live guys. I don't know. Anything.
Not, yeah.
Anything would have been better than nothing here.
Drake with Bobby and Gable would have made more sense.
Yes, totally.
But, like, it was really weird. I wish he wasn't dressed like with the Authors of Pain. But on the plus side, and I am taking this as a massive, massive positive, aside from Authors of Pain being taken seriously and getting a bit of a push, I'm also, I know I've been away for 2 weeks, I'm also glad there wasn't any NXT call-ups following SummerSlam, because let's focus on the ones you've not actually done anything with yet. So, plus side, glad the Authors of Pain are finally getting something. But B, they're not facing Titus Worldwide anymore.
Mm,
so
yes,
that's, for me, thumbs up all round.
Squashing jobbers instead.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully next week they would have figured out what they're doing here and it doesn't look as stupid. Then we got Ronda and the Bellas backstage where, you know, Ronda is chatting to Natalia because they're best friends. And then the Bellas come in and are like, hey, if you need any help with anything, training, how to run your own business,
how to write a book,
just let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Ronda's like, oh, thanks, girls. That's so sweet. And the Bellas walk off. And, oh, my God. It's so, so lovely backstage with the baby faces of the women's division.
Well, Nikki's turning heel, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that seems to be the way. The big rumored match is Ronda Rousey and Nikki Bella at Evolution because mainstream.
The Bella twins are stars. Natty also had a line here which said she doesn't feel herself at the moment.
Mm.
And she sort of just walked off. Did she lose last week?
I can't. I think she... No, she won, didn't she? Off of the back of her father's death.
Oh, yeah?
It was kind of... it was a nice moment in Canada as well.
Oh, well, it was quite a nice moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't care about any of the women's division really. Mm. It's not engaging at all, and it's actually quite insulting. It was interesting that as part of all the StarCast stuff over the weekend, the Wrestling Observer did a live Q&A session. Mm. And one of the people who got up was a lady person who has gotten into wrestling as an adult, which is quite a curious thing. And she's like, I like wrestling, I like indie wrestling. I want to find female wrestling, though, that isn't written by men, because I feel like all the WWE stuff is just like who's friends with who, and it feels really just kind of like underlying misogynistic in a way. And yep. that's what we... It's nice to hear that, because that's what we've been saying for months now.
Yep.
And Meltzer just said, Stardom. Go and watch Stardom in Japan,
yeah.
Because that's, you know, kind of written by women. It's like... She raised a really good point. The women's division is kind of like what a juvenile teenage boy would think women and men would want to see from a women's
absolutely yeah
like feud and storyline.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like films that are sort of about female characters or female friendships that are written by men. They don't feel like. I mean, they don't feel like actual real-life women relationships. Mm. And I think that really is an underlying problem within WWE, is that every single person on the writing staff has a penis. Every person who is sort of in control of sort of like production and everything probably has a penis as well.
And Randy Orton is going around shaking hands.
Yes. So
it's not the most conducive environment for anyone other than someone with a penis.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that, I mean, female writers are so needed. And I know, and it's not to say that, I mean, we talked about this on the old movie podcast, that you shouldn't just hire women so they can write women segments. You should have them just so you can like bounce off ideas. Women can also write men's segments.
Yes.
But also men can write a women's segment, but have some input from a female writer, be like, well, actually, from a female perspective, I would do it this way.
Yeah, just get ideas from all genders.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Absolutely not.
It's a real problem in
WWE.
Yeah,
it really is.
Then we had the Shawn Michaels stuff. Then Finn Balor comes in and Baron Corbin says, I can't do the main event tonight, so you're going to face Braun Strowman. And I'm like, okay. That's much better. I'd had no interest in seeing Corbin and Balor again.
As the main events, no less.
Yeah. And then they flashed up a match graphic that said, up later, Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin. I was like, what? Did I just dream that segment? We are getting Corbin Balor as the main event. Thankfully, it seems like it was just a production problem.
Okay.
But yeah, that was momentarily scary. Then we got Bayley and Sasha Banks beating Dana Brooke and Ember Moon. They've started doing this storyline where Evolution is approaching. Titus, as the kind of manager figure he is of Titus Worldwide, or what an awful job he's done, though. He wants to get Dana Brooke prepared and get a match at Evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So that is now the second female storyline on the show, because you can't have more than one.
No.
And it's kind of like... It's also just a storyline that's only Dana Brooke. So there's no real counterpart to this feud. Sasha Banks and Bayley are just there. Ember Moon is just there.
Yeah, why was Ember Moon tagging with Dana Brooke?
Because everyone else is now either a friend of Ronda or Alexa, and they're in that bit over there.
Oh, I see.
And the Riot Squad are going to face the Bellas for the next 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Nia Jax is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, that's a good question, because we haven't seen her since Money in the Bank, have we not?
Yeah, was the pay-per-view afterwards?
Was the pay-per-view
afterwards? Extreme Rules,
the
rematch.
I was really confused at the start of this as well, because Sasha's music hits, and Michael Cole says, it's boss time. But then the match card, the graphic just says, Bayley.
Mm.
And I was like, so I'd written down Sasha Banks, and I was like, oh no, that's wrong. It's Bayley versus Dana Brooke.
Like a singles match, yeah.
And then Ember Moon came out, and I was like, is it a triple threat? And then it was a tag match, and I was like, wait, what?
It was really weird, because not only did it was just that name bar graphic, when Bayley walked out, it was like she was in mid-conversation with Sasha Banks. She was just talking to him normally.
Yeah.
It was really weird and off-putting, considering all the usual sexy Sasha side hip thing and Bayley wacky waving, flaming and inflatable arm tube men stuff. But yeah, this was a fine match. I enjoy Brooke wrestling. I think she's quite fun when she does all her flips and stuff.
Although they did manage to botch a tag.
Yeah. And the moon kind of tagged, rolled out, had to roll back in and tag in.
Yeah.
But the thing was that it was a short match. Titus Worldwide is screaming at Vice. This distracts Dana. That's the reason she loses, not because she's not on Banks and Bailey's level.
Yeah.
And Brooke storms off.
I felt really bad for Ember Moon in this match. Poor old Ember Moon.
Never had an actual storyline on Raw.
Nope.
She was called up in April.
Well, I mean, well, speaking of that, we'll come on to this with Lashley, I suppose. But also the commentators just couldn't stop talking about Triple H and Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker.
Well, this doesn't matter.
Well, that's so, it. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much what that said to me. It was like, none of this really matters. What you should focus on is the fact that HBK and Taker are in the ring. And what a privilege it is for Renee to be able to witness that moment on the commentary desk.
Oh, Renee, you lucky thing.
So onto that Bobby Lashley thing, I was going to sort of spin off from that on. So Lashley has been back with his company since April?
Yes.
They still have no idea what they're doing with him. Like,
they've tried a few things, haven't they? But it's like, why are you trying things when you've got a clear blueprint of what works?
Yeah. But that worked in that won't work in this company.
Yeah, it's like that's not our idea.
It's like when Goldberg first came in, like in 2004, and they were like, yeah, but WCW went out of business, so clearly that never worked.
So clearly the answer is to make him wrestle 10, 15-minute matches week in, week out.
And put him in a gold wig.
So yes, Bobby Lashley has had this kind of character revamp since SummerSlam.
Oh, was he really?
Where he is joshing with Baron Corbin, where Baron Corbin, it's like a passive-aggressive thing. Where Lashley will be very sarcastic to Corbin and do things that he says, but then, like, kick ass.
Okay.
And it's, like, it's a terrible waste of Lashley, in my opinion. I've seen that some people are getting a kick out of it. I'm not. And this segment opens with Lashley just standing outside of Corbin's office with a sheet of paper. And Charlie Caruso's like, what's that piece of paper there, my man? And Bobby Lashley says, oh, my man, it's my performance review that my man Baron Corbin just gave me. Says I've got anger issues and I've got to go and do a live meditation with Jinder Mahal in the middle of the ring. Just like, just the worst parts of pro wrestling.
The bit that made me laugh the most was not just Lashley saying "my man" all the time, and which just makes me think of Aquaman in Justice League. Like, my man, and I'm like, oh, this is the Aquaman you've chosen to go with. That's brave.
Mm.
The bit that made me laugh the most is when he called Jinder Mahal Jinder Hall.
Jinder Hall.
He just went with my man Jinder Hall.
Maybe he thought that was the directions to the lobby area. Oh yes, in Jinder Hall.
Just get on Jinder Hall.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then this actually happened. Like
Two weeks off I've had of this show. I'm deep into the third hour here, and this is what I'm presented with.
I just
welcome back.
Even when they said meditation session with Jinder Mahal, when they've done this. The similar bits recently, it's been backstage. And this went through a lot of people, and to have a meditation session with all three men, Jinder, Sunil and Bobby, sitting cross-legged on a rug in the middle of the ring. It died a death. It was goofy. Bobby Lashley kept on saying my man.
But also you missed the key comedy moment though, which is when Jinder says, repeat after me. And Bobby went, repeat after me. And he was like, no, not that bit. And Bobby says, no, not that bit. Because he was repeating him, you see. And hilarity ensued. I mean, my note is that the crowd are so effing dead. And he just kept saying, my man.
It's because it killed them.
It really did.
WWE committed mass homicide here.
They killed
a crowd with this segment.
This was so embarrassing.
So this was bad. And you know, like that's what WWE do. Lashley's not doing anything at the moment. Jinder Mahal is one of the biggest rises and falls of someone who was not really like a pet project kind of character in recent memory, I think, like thinking of where he was last year. But fine. Okay, of course we've got a freaking meditation segment with Bobby Lashley weirdly saying my man every couple of minutes.
Is this worse than the sisters?
No. Right? So,
the smiling into the camera, I love you.
Because at least, like, Lashley is behaving like this is a joke and everything.
Yeah, he was making fun of it.
Yeah. So, but it's still spectacularly lame.
Oh, yes, this is lame.
But what kind of annoyed me more, just from, like, failed potential, because this never had any potential. This was just an already stupid idea waste. Kevin Owens makes his return after quitting Raw last week after that fantastic match with Seth Rollins, and it was genuinely the most intriguing narrative thing that was going on in WWE, really. Like, oh, what's going to happen with Owens? Is he going to return as a babyface? Is he going to come back with Paul Heyman? No, he's going to return 7 days later and just attack Bobby Lashley. It's kind of like WWE, like, oh, Sami Zayn's out injured now. He was feuding with Bobby Lashley, so let's just have Owens in there the month after. I hated this. Hated it. And Owens did the big pop-up powerbomb to Lashley on the apron. And Owens' performance was good, but you need to keep him out longer. He shouldn't be making his return any earlier than Hell in a Cell. And that's only 2 weeks away. It's not like it's a long time to hold off. I prefer you keep him out longer. Oh, I hated this. I hated this so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't around for Owens quitting, so like him just coming back 7 days later.
You should watch that match. I've heard it was really good.
Yeah. So him coming back a week after hasn't like been like, oh, what's the point of all of this? Like, as much as it probably should have done. But it did make me think, like, if you were doing the storyline of him quitting, like, why did he walk to the back? Like, why didn't he just sort of walk out the arena? And then you still could have done the thing, like, he doesn't work here anymore, but he's attacking people at ringside. And maybe if you'd have gone in that direction, I could have been on board with that as an interesting... But then he just came out during the main event anyway, so I'm like, no, I guess he's just back then.
Yeah.
So, for me, I'm not as angry as you are, although I think you're quite right in your anger. To me, it was just a, cool, I guess.
Yeah. I love Owen so much. He really is one of my favourites. And it's just all these false starts. I think they're going to do something with him. They put the freaking Universal Championship on the guy, and it was a waste of a run, let's be honest. What else can you expect? The main event was Finn Balor versus Braun Strowman. Corey Graves gets an update on his phone just before this match begins. The Shield have been released from prison.
I mean, hopefully the police can give him a ride back.
Well, why didn't they say broken out? Like, if you're going to do this stupid storyline, can't they just break out of prison?
Oh my God, that would have been so rad.
Much better.
That would have been rad. Like, we just had a report. The whole wall's come down.
Yeah.
Like, there's just shield-shaped holes.
Yes.
And they just ran at them.
So that's the thing in the background. So, of course, they're going to come back at some point. It was really cool seeing Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler at ringside with the championship belts, even though the pairing with Braun Strowman is a bit mismatched.
It's just randomly thrown together because we need a six-man tag for Super Showdown or whatever it is. Mm.
And Balor and Strowman, I think they've got very good chemistry, actually. Balor knows how to work with a character like Braun.
And I also really liked the commentators were putting this over that 2 weeks ago, Balor took Roman Reigns to the limit and he nearly won the Universal Championship off of him. But here, Strowman just beat him easily. And they were like, so Strowman's facing Roman 2 weeks in Hell in a Cell. Like, what's Roman going to do? I think that was actually a nice way to sort of tell the story of this match.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you step out, though, and look at the wider scheme of things, you're like, oh, so that means Finn Balor was fed to Braun Strowman to feed to Roman Reigns. So it's all one big feeding of the big dog.
Well, haven't you come up with this thing that he's a black hole and things just sort of fall into it now?
Yes, like a Brie hole.
Brie hole!
it's the event horizon where light can no longer escape a black hole. So
that Paul W.S. Anderson movie with Sam Neill.
Yes, yeah. You know, there's that really good bit in Event Horizon where they get a video feed.
That's a sentence that's never been said, by the way.
It's a great movie! Oh, my God.
I'm messing with you.
There's a really horrifying bit in it. It's one of those things that stays with you forever, for me at least. And it's
the naked lady bit.
They find this video or like a recording on the spaceship, and it essentially shows a clip of hell in this other dimension that the previous ship had gone to. And there's just all this weird stuff going on in it, people. Like, a guy vomits arms. And it's just such a, like, horribly demonic imagery. I think you could have switched that out for the Bobby Lashley meditation segment, and it still would be equally horrific. So Balor and Strowman have a good match. I did enjoy it. And Strowman wins with a power slam. Quite significantly, one power slam. Because I really liked that match back in May when Strowman was a face and Balor like gave him good competition. So almost to honour Balor, Strowman put him away with two power slams. Mm. But this was just one power slam. I don't know if they put that much thought into it, but that's what I got from it. And then, as the heels are beating down Balor afterwards, they're going...
Cesaro was about to make an entrance.
They're going to powerbomb Finn on the steel steps. The police fan backs into the arena.
Yeah, with Roman driving.
Of course he is. I'm surprised he didn't drive it into Braun like he did with the last vehicle he drove. And Roman comes round, opens the doors, and there's Dean and Seth inside. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah, it's goofy, but it's wrestling.
A lot of people, and like, this is good goofy. This isn't Lashley meditation goofy.
Absolutely not.
I've seen a lot of people be sniffy about this.
Like, of course they have.
Oh, it's Labor Day. I don't think they'll find a judge at 7 p.m. to clear them and get them out of prison. I mean, yeah, hell, I've never been heard of anything turning around in the judicial process, which is, you know, not the most streamlined in this country.
Those are the people that write corrections on IMDb.
Exactly.
They said they were flying a Boeing 747, but actually, if you look at the markings on the interior, it's actually not that plain at all.
And sometimes we're those guys. I know that.
It's just fun to do the voice, though.
Yeah, but this, like, I thought this was fun. And there's such a rich tradition of stealing official vehicles and driving them back to the arena you were arrested in.
Yeah.
So I didn't mind it at all. But what I did mind, again, was Kevin Owens coming out to sort of fend off the Shield attacking the heels, because it was just all the bad guys from the locker room.
And Drew Gulak.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was really... I was like, is that Drew Gulak? Because I saw Mike Kanellis in The Ascension, and I'm like, well, it's odd that they're there. But then I thought, why is Drew Gulak there?
I would have preferred just a beatdown from Strowman and McIndolph. I don't think you needed another locker room emptying angle.
But I think this was more to put over that Corbin let it happen.
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of the story they're telling, is that now that Corbin is in charge, the heels are sort of running wild, and the Hounds of Justice need to step up and fight off against every single heel on the roster, which means I'd imagine that's what they're going to do next week. The Shield will win like this, a 12-on-3 match.
Randy Orton, John Cena style.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like when DX were tag team champions and all they did was just bury every other tag team.
I wonder if this is going to end in a Kurt Angle, a Team Angle versus Team Corbin match at Survivor Series.
That's where, with either man's job on the line. Uh-huh. That's like, if Angle wins, he's reinstated.
Oh,
if
God, Corbin... Angle better lose.
And it'll be like, it'll be the Shield and the Revival, and who else would be in there? Bobby, maybe, against McIndolph and Strowman, whoever the hell. Kevin Owens and whoever else was on the outside. Maybe the Ascension. I don't know.
Drew Gulak.
Yeah, and Drew Gulak.
Drew Gulak.
But yeah, I'd imagine they'll do like maybe a big 7-on-7 tag match at Survivor Series.
Which could be really fun.
Be different than to doing Raw versus SmackDown, which so far has meant sweet FA. Do you remember when Raw won last year? Yeah. When Triple H and Braun Strowman had that moment.
When Triple H won it for both Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, and it led to Nout.
Yeah. When the heel locker room emptied, it really exposed how lacking the heel side on Raw is.
Isn't it just
the Ascension, like you said, Mike Kanellis.
Mojo's out there.
Yeah.
And Jinder, and I was like, this is your heel side. Mm. No wonder you had to turn Strowman heel.
Yeah. And Owens was out there again, and like you said, that was a huge, huge problem for me.
Because he's teaming with Braun.
Yeah, which was one of the reasons he was driven out of the company last week.
Yeah.
I really hated that logic hole.
Yeah.
That Brie hole. I gave this 3 out of 5, though, because I did enjoy a lot here. And I'm optimistic about the tag division.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of positives to be having this. I certainly think it was a newsworthy show as well. I think I would have also gone 3 out of 5.
So not the best show ever, not the worst show ever.
No.
But sometimes it was fine.
But sometimes if you give a show a 4 out of 5, we're still being too negative.
Yes.
So I think this is very much a middle-of-the-road show. Some good, some very, very, very bad. And Brie missing dives.
Mm. That was a bit of both, really. It was kind of like depressing, but also rather funny at the same time. Particularly that first one.
It was just watching her take 25,000 steps to the ropes, though.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost like, you know, when you're running, like, the Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
Where you're sort of just running in the place skittles, and everything's moving past you.
I just... Because I kept on saying on the podcast, when I hear remote, I just feel like everything goes into dreaded slow motion.
Yeah.
And she somehow managed to fall through gravity in slow motion on that first dive.
So would you like to hear a pretty crazy story about one of the members of the group that I was in?
Well, yes, and this has been built up for about 20 minutes, because you told me back in the coffee shop, that's right, we get sexy coffee round here. That's a benefit of recording in the murder room.
Well, I want to talk about that. I mean, I don't want just this whole podcast to be Canada-based or like honeymoon-based. But, so anyway, I mentioned this in the show as well. We had this sort of conversation about, like, what do you do for a living? And there's 13 of us, and we went round. Usually, I would say, on average, those sorts of things, conversations take 10, 20 minutes. You go around each person. What do? I do this. That sounds cool. Next person. You sort of move along. It took us an hour and a half to get round because it turns out we're a very chatty group and we just want to ask questions about people's work. And we
That's
take it.
Lovely.
It was really, really nice. It was a really sweet moment. I think it bonded us very, very well. And I think it leads to one of us, you know, getting on very well as a group. But it comes around to me.
Always helps for those orgy situations.
Pretty much.
Breaking the ice.
Well, I mean, and as I said, I'm not sure if I said this, but there was three lads in a 13-person group.
It's a great ratio.
Yeah, pretty much. And so it got round to me, and I have to do the, what do you do? I write and present videos for a YouTube channel. Oh, that's really cool. You know, what's it about? It's about pro wrestling. Chatting about this and the other. And then the girl who was sat next to me is this girl called Denise. Really, really funny. I really, really like Denise. And she was like, oh, a friend of mine's a wrestler. And I said, oh, no way, really? She was like, yeah, have you ever heard of Joe Hendry?
What? All Scottish people know each other.
And I was like, I do know Joe Hendry. Yeah, it's like he does some work for our show and stuff like that. I know him very well. And she was like, yeah, no, I it was one of my, like, closest friends.
No.
Yeah. Like, she even messaged Joe while we were away saying, like, you'll never guess who I'm on a tour with. And it was really funny. Like, it turns out, like, she was from Edinburgh. She moved to Glasgow just as he'd gone back to Edinburgh. Then he'd gone to Canada to tape Impact.
Yeah.
And as she was flying over to Canada, he was flying back over to Scotland. So they kept, like, joking with each other. Oh, we keep missing each other.
A hot tag on a plane.
Yeah. So that was a really, really weird sort of small world scenario. And the other girl, Rosie, also knew Joe, because as you said, all Scottish people know Joe Hendry. But they were, I was like, we preferred him when he was the local hero. We don't like him now, he's prestigious.
Sure.
He's not local enough anymore.
Cool. That is amazing. I didn't think that was where the story was going.
Yeah, but it was really, really cool. Like, I got on well with the group. And, like, Denise and Rosie were so funny. They were really awesome on the trip.
All right, why didn't you start a channel with them?
Because they knew nowt about wrestling, mate.
Jealous.
But I want
to
hear...
have to be about wrestling.
I want to hear about your studio sitch, which has changed drastically since I was here. Like, not only is, like, the whole wrestling landscape changed with All In and Braun Strowman being a heel and Becky Lynch... It's going to be my first experience today of possibly heel Becky Lynch, question mark?
I'm hoping Stone Cold Becky Lynch
seemed
to be where we ended last week.
Okay, so we'll see where that lands on tonight's SmackDown. But also, a whole different studio. I had to get off to at a different tube stop today.
Just so happens to be my local tube stop.
It is indeed. So at least I knew more or less where I was. But how's it all been? What's the story?
So I briefly said this on the first day, because originally this was meant to be a 3-day excursion from the studio. So this was like, what, 2 Thursdays ago. So we've had, as I've said on the podcast before, a bit of a pigeon problem.
Mm-hmm.
In the studio that we rent. The studio's kind of in the middle of nowhere. We call it London Zone 6.
Yeah.
It's generous.
Yeah.
And
it's actually Zone 5.
Is it Zone 5?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. We're practically central. And it's an old building, and we've had to kind of not use the back room anymore because in the last, like, few months, there's been this... That's where we used to record the TV show.
It's the dove from above.
Yeah. And... But I got a pest control guy in. I said, how do we get these pigeons out? Because they were kind of in a bit we couldn't access. And he was like, oh, I don't know. You'll probably have to rip down the entire ceiling. I was like, what? That sounds like a big job. And he went, yeah, you see where it's starting to bow there? so the ceiling was kind of, it looked heavier in the middle. He said, well, that's because pigeons, when you get a lot of them, they can get quite heavy. And I was like, yeah, I guess 50 or so pigeons, which is what we were talking about, could get quite heavy. And then he went, oh, yeah, and the accumulated fouling.
Yeah.
And I was like,
And not fouling as in a sports game.
No, fouling as in feces, bird poop.
Poop.
And
poop game.
He claimed that a pigeon can drop about a pound of foul a day.
Well, considering that my wife has been pooped on in the mouth, she could probably attest to the fact that it is very heavy and gross.
Oh, to buy a pigeon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were just going back to your Canada stories again. Your crazy orgy. So, yeah, it was... That was what we were dealing with. I go away on holiday. We're talking to how to get it fixed. Come back from holiday, and there seems to be a bit of light,
It wasn't
light.
Really a holiday. You were on your quest to find.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Byron Saxton. Yeah,
got found Byron Saxton. It's Chris Jericho. Apparently, he's everyone. And there was a bit more light in the back room because it's an industrial unit, and our particular room has no natural light. But now it did. This morning it did. Because the ceiling had partially fallen through. Loads of pigeons had come down into the old studio. Ooh, it was horrible. And yeah, so when you went away, I got sort of a team to come in, clear it out, and take down the ceiling. And the first day, so this was meant to be 3 days. It was the Thursday, Friday, and Monday. And that was okay because I could record all the green screen stuff in this in the murder room, as we're calling it, just because it's all red.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could go back into the studio on the Tuesday and do Wrestle Ramble with Laurie, because that's a different, it's a different setup. We would have the whole T-shirt thing. It's not the most elaborate backdrop, but it is a backdrop. And It's our backdrop. I got a phone call on Friday morning at like 7:30 a.m. from the waste disposal people and the pest control people, just being like, "Yeah, we came in this morning and there was a bit of smoke, so the fire brigade came round, ripped open all of the rooms that I'd sealed up with plastic sheeting to find the fuse box. They get to the back of the studio and they're like, "Oh, it's this pigeon has just like died." Onto a light, just a normal light. So it was just like gently smoking.
Yeah,
ugh.
Cooking away.
Yeah, and they shower it with water. It just so happens where they spray the hose is above the actual fuse box. They couldn't find. They'd already killed the electricity, but of course now we can't turn it back on. So, That's where it's at the moment. So we are, we're here for at least the next month.
Yeah, we're here for a little bit.
Mm.
Before we go, 2 points I just want to make. They're two very quick ones. So
I feel like we need to do Live Aid for the studio.
Yeah. So I did get an email in, which is an Agony Arts request.
Oh, yes.
But obviously I'm not going to read out this person's name because she did request to be anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
But... it's about her and her fiancé, who is also a pledgehammer and got her into wrestling and is also on the podcast. And he listens to them more frequently than she does. But I'm not sure we can read this email out because it is saucy.
What?
And if we want to keep our non-explicit rating, we may not be able to read this one out. But I wanted to read it with you off air. Then maybe we can give some... perhaps advice for her as she has asked about it through as vague terms as we possibly could. So
okay.
I thought we'll do that on tomorrow's episode. Also, I nearly died
that
while
is a
on
kinky tease.
I nearly died while we're on my honeymoon.
You nearly died?
Yeah. So while whitewater rafting.
So this is a serious. I nearly died.
Well, possibly. Yeah. So on our whitewater rafting, we got towards the end, which was like this sort of like final sort of like. Level 4 thing that they do, which is like the most that you can legally do as a commercial company taking tours on. And it was really cool. But the guy said to us, like, if you guys want to swim in this lake, which is obviously it's like a natural whitewater rafting lake, he said, if you want to swim in it, you've got to do it now because this is going to be your last chance to do it.
Okay.
And I was in a bit of an awkward position because I couldn't really get over. And he was like, "You just got to throw yourself over." And I did,
like Zack Ryder.
Yeah, and I did want to swim in this lake because I'd swum in a lot of the other lakes, including a glacier one. So I was like, "Yeah, definitely want to do this." So I kind of flung myself over, but got slightly caught and ended up falling in. And as I fell in, the raft twisted and it hit me.
Oh.
And I went underneath the raft.
No.
And my back hit a rock.
Oh.
Like, so I instantly went poof, and I just then split up. My head hit to the raft as well. I'm stuck under the raft. And I had to, like, proper, like, scramble and swim, because I'm swimming against the tide to get myself out the other side.
Holy crap.
So eventually I managed to get out the back of the boat and then swim round. And even when I swam round and I accidentally let go, poof, it went away from me. And I had to swim to catch up with it as well. But it was proper scary for something I thought was going to be quite a lark.
Did the guy know? Was he, like, keeping tabs on you?
I think he was talking to someone else when I did it.
Oh.
So, and then it was funny because I was on the opposite side of the boat to my wife. But when I came back up and to get back into the boat, I was next to her. And at no point did she think, why are you now on my side?
Magic trick.
And when I told her afterwards, she was like, oh, that makes sense why you were on the same side as me in the end.
That's my worst nightmare, that is, drowning.
Ugh. Oh, it was not fun, I can tell you that much. But the rest of the experience was awesome.
Well, what a lovely note to end on.
Yeah, I'm still alive.
Yes. Well, we'll have, you know, whatever this sexy email is. Gonna enjoy that off air. I usually do this bit.
Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah. I do, because we're so out of practice this. You even botched the intro for this.
I called it the Wrestle Talk podcast, which would make a lot more sense from a branding perspective.
Yes, but we're not all about branding here, are we? That'd be professional. But thank you very much for listening. We'll see you on tomorrow's show when we review SmackDown Live, see what happens on there. I've no idea what's going on with SmackDown at the moment. I think there's a tag tournament or something.
It's been okay? Yeah.
Cool, that's great. But we'll see you then. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.